The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright. The power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, and it is fall here. We are not using the air conditioning, and the weather is fabulous for sleeping, and I'm just loving beautiful Southern California, especially this time of year. Hey, I want to say hi to all my Palm Springs friends and clients and let them know how much I am loving the Palm Springs Healing Center. If you're in Southern California and want a super-duper hypnosis session designed to get you on track with your desired manifestation, then come see me in Paradise in Palm Springs. And if you're not in the area, well, hey, call me and we can arrange for a Skype session that consists of about 40 minutes of LOA coaching and 30 minutes of a hypnosis session, which I record and then send it to you so that you can continue to keep on setting your intentions and rewiring your brain to accept everything it is that you are desiring. So don't forget, your desires manifest at a very fast rate using hypnosis, and I'm here to help you. So give me a call. Now tonight we have Marty McGibbons, whose life story is like a Hollywood thriller, Lifetime movie and romantic comedy all rolled into one, and how the awareness of the law of attraction really changed her desperate life into something incredible. It's going to be a great show for you tonight, so sit back, relax, kick up your feet, unless, of course, you're driving, and get ready to be inspired right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com. Need help realizing your dreams? As a hypnotherapist specializing in the Law of Attraction, Jules Johnson can help you to break through your critical mind into your manifested dream. Get started today by going to lawofattractiontools.com. Set up a personal Skype video or phone session. Law of Attraction Tools is there to help you turn your desires into reality. That's lawofattractiontools.com.
Welcome back. Now, before we talk to Marty McGibbon about her incredible life, there was something that I came across this week that I thought you may really appreciate hearing. It's about the top five regrets that people think about during the last days of their lives. And I thought, well, this may make you stop and think about if you're living your life to the fullest today. So let's do regret number one. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life that someone else wanted for me, like a mother or father, a husband or sibling, something that I wanted to do for me. I wish I would have had the courage to do that. Regret number two, I wish I didn't work so hard, because I now realize that making money isn't everything. Actually, it's nothing that I thought it was. It's amazing how you finally come to understand the absurdity of money when you're facing death. Regret number three. I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. If only I could have told someone how much I loved them or to ask them for forgiveness. Regret number four. I wish I would have stayed in touch with my friends and family. It's funny how one never ceases to miss them. Regret number five. I wish I had let myself be happier. If only I could have committed myself to being happy as much as I committed myself to conform to the will of society. I believe now that I could have changed my world with just my smile. These are pretty good. And this got me thinking, of course, that I don't want any of these regrets. And actually, I want something more. I guess for me, I would like to fully understand that we are truly one. And when I helped someone else, I really helped myself. And when I help myself, I really help someone else. I want to look back and see all the people that I have touched. And when I come back, you know, reincarnate, I want the full awareness of this. So I won't waste any time being so afraid of something silly called death. I want to jump in right where I left off, fully understanding that we are all one. And I want to remember this as soon as I am born, understanding the spiritual essence to life. So no, I don't want these regrets. And I now fully understand that I just want to keep on setting my intentions for my next life, while even on my deathbed. Now that's what you call the law of attraction in action. So let's get on with tonight's show. Marty was one of the first women to work as a laborer in a Texas oil field. She set off explosive with seismic exploration companies, then switched to surveying, staking oil wells. Her spontaneous sense of humor led to a career in stand-up comedy in the 1980s, where she shared the stage with comedy legends such as Sam Kinison and Bill Hicks. After moving to California and landing a scheduled appearance on The Tonight Show, Marty became entangled in an abusive relationship, drug addiction, and desperation. She wound up as a human sex slave, trafficked to Tokyo, and held prisoner by Japanese organized crime figures, but escaped with the help of a Hong Kong smuggler. The tragedy Marty experienced left her traumatized and homeless, but she used the law of attraction, positive visualization, relentless resiliency, and hard work to turn her life around. Marty obtained education in chemical dependency studies and now holds 4 professional certifications in addiction treatment. Today, Marty is an inspirational speaker, a member of the National Speakers Association, and author of the best-selling memoir, Never Give In to Fear. 20 years ago, she could have died, but today she is a living legend on how the law of attraction works. Welcome, Marty, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, thank you, Jules. It's great to be here.
Now, you have an incredible story with your book called Never Give In to Fear, Laughing All the Way Up from Rock Bottom, which happens to be a National Indie Excellent Award winner.
Yes, those awards come out of Beverly Hills.
Oh, and how nice.
I thought that's kind of swanky, you know?
Give us a clue as to what your incredible story is, because I know it's going to amaze all of the listeners out there.
Well, yeah, the book is a memoir, and it tells the most difficult years of my life, and when I was in active drug addiction and suffering from some other things, but it was a downward spiral, and I turned my life around using the law of attraction and present moment awareness, and my life for the last 18 years has just been fantastic. But I had 9 years of hardcore drug addiction, and some terrible things happened to me that actually fueled the addiction. But anyway, I just decided in the last few years, you know, that I would write the book, because it's such a miracle what happened in my life, and I'm so happy, and I've been so lucky, you know. Well, it's not really luck. It has been the law of attraction since I took the helm, since I turned things around. And then I realized looking back that even in the darkest moments of my downward spiral, there was the law of attraction was working and actually kept me alive. And so there were some things going on that I didn't realize that I was doing that actually kicked the power into gear. And then when I got into, you know, and I started turning my life around and I was changing everything, I started to realize, well, hey, this was a visualization. This was a thing that brought me through. So I wanted to tell the story because I wanted people to know that no matter how bad your life might be or how bad you feel like you've messed up, or in my case, no matter how bad you have messed up, you can always change it. And there really is change is possible. And it's always at our fingertips because we exist in the present moment. So, and I've given a really long answer to a quick question, so I'll stop now.
Well, actually, it's not a quick question because I was hoping that you would share some of your incredible hard time stories because you're right. Right now, everybody is feeling the pinch of something other in their life.
Yes.
And they need a little bit of inspiration. And when they hear the darkest moments of your life, and how you really changed your thought to shift your life completely.
Yeah.
It will be such an inspiration to all the listeners.
Happy to do it. Well, I think rock bottom, I think one of the absolute worst, one of the worst, let's see, where do I start? Okay, I was a successful stand-up comic. And I had a Tonight Show scheduled with Johnny Carson, which, you know, back in those days, that was a big deal. It was a really big break.
Right.
And I had some things that had happened to me early in life that were traumatic. I think they did play into this. But I shifted from recreational drug user to addict. And that happened because I met a guy. And I just thought he was the hottest thing. He was a handsome sociopath.
Yes.
And we all know one.
Yes, been there, done that.
Yeah. And in this case, the two of us together, it was an abusive relationship, and he did isolate me. It was a classic case of domestic violence, really. There was the isolation, there was the dominance, the controlling behavior, and then the threats and attacks and things like that. But I was trying to get away from him. Anyway, we ended up living in my car and selling drugs to get by. And I was, and occasionally I would even do comedy gigs in between all the chaos and running from him and different. It was just my life had become a nightmare, and I was ashamed to ask my family for help. I had lovely parents, you know, everything, but I was just too ashamed to tell anyone how badly things had gone. And so I was looking for a way out, and I thought if I could just get out of it. I was in San Francisco. I thought if I could just get out of this city and get away from him, I could start all over again. I could still do my Tonight Show and everything would be great. Well, what happened was there was a woman that I had met. I met this girl on the beach, and she said, well, if you need to make some quick money, I know somebody, I know a way. And so I had contacted the woman that she told me about, and this lady had an escort service, and she was sending a girl. She told me she was sending a girl every month and had been for about a year. I'd been sending a girl every month to Japan as an escort, and she asked me if I would be interested in doing that, and the addiction and the abusive relationship and everything, I'm not defending this at all, but I'm just saying, I just thought it could be a possible way out. I thought nobody knows me in Japan, and my parents will never find out, and I can just whip over there for a week, date a couple of Japanese businessmen, and I can be out of there with enough money to relocate somewhere and pick up my where I left off, and I'll quit drugs, you know, I'm saying all that. And, of course, it was – I'm hearing a funny thing with the sound. Are you okay? Oh, okay. I'm just hearing kind of a buzzing. Okay. Anyway, so I went to Japan, and she had told me that it would be I would have control. And I went over there with a one-way ticket and met my contact at the airport, and they took me prisoner. It was Japanese organized crime. And I was a prisoner in a little it was an apartment in Tokyo, and I had to see a man every hour, and I was threatened with death, and I was brutalized, isolated. They only spoke English to me if, you know, for commands. But if I tried to say something like, hey, look, I'd like to get out of here, you can call, you know, whatever, then it'd be, oh, I do not understand you, you must speak so late, you know, that kind of thing. It was just, it was like a surrealistic, horrible nightmare. And, I mean, psychological and physical abuse, and I'm just the worst possible thing you could ever imagine. And, well, no, I shouldn't say the worst possible thing I can ever imagine. So when I realized the trouble I was in and this situation and how I might not get out alive, and just I thought I was going to lose my mind completely and just start screaming. And I knew that if I lost it and started screaming, these people would kill me, because that's the way those kind of people are. something happened where I found my courage, and I thought to myself, okay, I'm going home for Christmas. This was at the beginning of November. And I said to myself, I don't care what I see on the outside or what happened. I mean, I'm not going to let that decide. I have made my decision. I'm going home for Christmas. I'm hanging on to that visualization, and that's it. And that's going to be what I'm going to hang on to. And then the other promise I made to myself was that I would treat the people around me with respect. And I thought with those two things, I could retain my inner self, my essence, and that I would be able to come through and no matter what. And I hung onto that visualization. I just kept thinking, I'm going home for Christmas. And
there was a possibility. I mean, they weren't going to let you go home.
No.
You were there. You were there permanently.
Yeah, I was.
And how long were you there before you had that visualization?
Oh, I picked up on that visualization within the first 48 hours. I mean, I had to survive, and it took a few weeks, but the exact right person came into that place who helped me to escape, and I was home 2 days before Christmas, and so that is one. That was probably the worst. When I got home and I had escaped, I got back, I was absolutely terrified of the traffickers and absolutely terrified of the Japanese mafia and of what might happen, because I had come back. I went back to the boyfriend, and he beat me up and almost killed me. And, I mean, it was just, I went back to the drugs to try to cope with things. I went out. I was homeless, sleeping under bridges in abandoned houses. I mean, they didn't have homeless shelters back then. You know, they didn't have them. And so it was just nightmarish. But during that time, I fled the city. I went north of San Francisco up to the Redwoods up in Sonoma County up by Santa Rosa. And I think if I had stayed in the city, I would have been dead, you know, but I got up there, and I was homeless up there. And I was about a year of the under bridges and abandoned houses thing, about 6 months in the car. Then the car got, you know, cannibalized and taken away. And then I had the year. Well, during the year that I was homeless, I was working manual labor. You know, I worked as chopping firewood on a crew of kind of crazy woodcutters, and I'd make about $20 a day, and I would hitchhike to that job, and then I didn't want anybody to know I was homeless. I wouldn't let these guys that I worked with know I was homeless. And then I worked for a hippie landscaper too. So and I would hitchhike from town to town and do these jobs and then hitchhike home and be like homeless. And so on the way home from this one job of one night, I was really scared. It was foggy and it was all dark and everything. And I started thinking, you know, they never caught the Zodiac Killer and they never caught the Hillside Strangler. You know, I was really getting freaked out. And I saw this car coming down, there's a little pickup truck. I saw these headlights and I got out in front of the car and I was waving my arms, like flagging it down. And it was this really cute, sweet guy, and he gave me a ride, and we were talking, and I just thought, gee, you know, it's really too bad that I'm homeless, you know, because I really like this guy, you know, like that. And at the time, I had everything that I owned was just in a backpack. I mean, I had just the bare essentials for survival. But there was one non-essential item that I was carrying around. It was a pair of fancy high-heeled dancing shoes that I had left over from my clothes. I had these shoes, and I thought, you know what? One of these days, I'm going to go dancing. So I'm hanging on these shoes as a symbol, you know, and it was like a symbol of hope. So when I was in the car with this guy, and we were talking, and he was really nice, and you know what? Not only did he and I go dancing, but he's my husband now. We've been together for 26 years. So that was another kind of visualization that sort of came through. And he's my ideal mate. I mean, he's my knight in shining armor. And of course, he was in the drug scene too. Like, we were both heavily into the drug scene. And my book has some stuff about there's a shootout and there's some other crazy stuff. There's some bales of weed stolen from the cops and some wild stuff that he and I went through together. But we came out of drugs together and we're still together. And we do things for other people. Like right now, we're looking forward to a show we do. It's an annual comedy benefit for recovery that we do here in Indianapolis. And we have a house in Indianapolis and a house out in California. So here in Indianapolis, we do this show called Lapaholics, and we raise money for transitional housing facilities to help people who are coming back from addiction, who have no money and have nowhere to live. We raise the money for the places that help them in this town. And we have national headliners with TV credits, people that I know and people that I know through the business. And we just have a great time and laugh a lot and raise that money. So we've done a lot of things together, come back from tremendous adversity and changed our lives totally. And we've done it with the law of attraction and with the knowledge, the conscious use of the present moment to change the way I've used it to change the way I think about myself, other people, and the world. And I found that the more open my mind is and the more positive everything is, positive visualization, positive self-talk, positive affirmations, they really do work. It's science. It's quantum physics.
Yes, you're right. They really do work. But
and even
if we go back to when you were in Japan,
yes,
and you knew that you had set this in your mind that you were going to be out of there somehow, mm-hmm. you were going to escape.
Yes.
And you knew the power of the mind, but it takes a couple of more downbeats to get you to realize how powerful you were.
Yes.
Because even though you did that, you still sabotaged yourself.
Yes,
when
I didn't.
You got back.
Yes, I didn't recognize my power. Now, there are some things I've learned. You know, I hold four professional certifications in addiction treatment. So I have some clinical education and training now, and I know that it's typical for someone who's been so heavily traumatized as I was to do those behavior patterns, to go back to the boyfriend, to go back to the drugs. That's typical trauma behavior, post-traumatic. And I had PTSD. And so I think that complicated things a lot. And addiction does block a lot of things. So there were a lot of factors like that. But no, I didn't realize my full power.
I don't think a lot of people do, even
no.
without PTSD,
yeah.
Because it's really amazing how we can see something like miraculous,
yes.
but not yet recognize until
right.
we have a couple more hits in our heads.
Yeah.
And even if people are not on drugs,
yeah.
it's still how the human psyche works.
Yeah, I think there's that built-in doubt. There's that built-in tendency to rationalize and say, "Well, that was a lucky one," or "Oh, that was an incident." And what we do with those of us that are really into using this law of attraction and this kind of thing, we start to develop I'm not just talking about me. I think anyone can. If you turn things around and you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to start thinking differently, and it's not just the thinking, but it's the feeling. I think a lot of the times it's the thought, the decision making is maybe is the rudder, but the emotions are the sail. And so if we're feeling and defaulting to negative emotions, then we are blown toward negative things.
Yeah.
And so many times, I'll do a lot of check-ins throughout the day. If I find myself feeling a negative emotion, I will check back and think, well, what thought did I accept? You know, because I realize that all the thoughts, you have an average of 60,000 thoughts a day. And so, of course, you can't watch all your thoughts. But when you have something that you accept, it causes an emotion to register. And so with me, if I feel that I've had that, I can always trace it back to some mistaken belief from childhood, or there's something that I thought that day, like, oh, you're not going to make it, or whatever it is. There'll be this click. So then I can reset it, because we're only capable of feeling one emotion at a time. So in this body, in the present moment, as long as there's a feeling that's a positive feeling, then it keeps things on track, so we're constantly attracting more good things. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
And it turbocharges the positive thought, and it turbocharges the positive visualization. And when I was in Japan, I was not consciously doing this. I think what it was just that the higher part of me, my essential self, surfaced because of the extreme adversity, and kind of took over in that moment and sort of said, hey, this is how it's going to be. And then I kind of formed a bubble in my head, and I just thought, you know, this is it. Even if this is delusional, this is the way I'm going to think, because it's going to get me through day to day, and where I end up, then I end up. You know, I mean, this is it. This is all I'm going to do. And, you know, it did work. And then years later, I found out about quantum physics, and I found out about the law of attraction and how things work. And I thought, wow, that was great, you know. But then,
yeah, you had something to refer to. I'm going, oh, yeah, I was using it way back when.
Yeah, without realizing, not consciously using it, but it's so much more powerful when you consciously harness the power.
Yeah.
And that's what we do that's what you do. I mean, I've listened to some of your broadcasts. I've seen your website. I mean, you're doing that. You're just radiating power and energy and all kinds of good, beautiful stuff. And it all comes back to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I would have to admit to all of my wonderful listening audience that I'm not 100%.
Well, of course,
you know, I'm up to the 70%, I think I have really evolved.
70%'s great.
I know. I know.
Well, there's a tendency to, don't you think there's another human default state is that perfectionism that we fall into where we think, oh, you know, I was negative. Oh, I'm no good. You know, you don't have to be perfect, but I think just this, like the overall frequency, that's how powerful it is. You know, the positive is so powerful, because I found it in my life. I had been floating on this river of negative stuff. I mean, of just horrible pain for years. And then on the day that I saw it, I kind of accessed that same anchor that I had accessed in Japan. I had found that anchor, and I had said to myself, this is my space. This is me. It, you know, the part of you that when you close your eyes at night and it's just you, or you and God, or whatever, you and the source or whatever, when you're there and it's just you right before you go to sleep, that alpha state, that's my real estate. That's your real estate. That's what we have. No one can buy. We can guard that place, and nobody violates that. And that's what I did in Japan. It was like, this is me, and there's stuff going on with my body that's not. I'm defenseless in this way, or I'm, you know, this is what's happening. But I'm salvaging this, this is me, the essential me. So at a certain point, after all this hardcore addiction and homelessness and suffering and craziness and chaos, one day I realized how miserable I was. It's just like I had this, my higher self, I guess, or I had this moment where I found my anchor again. And I looked at my present moment experience and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm so miserable. And I sort of called out to a sort of a heathen junkie. It was like a junkie prayer, heathen prayer. Like I was just like, hey, God, if there's anything out there, you know, whoever you are, please help me because I'm so unhappy and I want to be happy. And then I had this moment where my mind just kind of quieted for the first time in many years, and I thought, hey, maybe it's the dope. and then my own, you know, I accepted. I was like, maybe it is. And that was like my miracle, because then I had something to work on, and I was filled with joy. I know this sounds so weird and crazy maybe, but I was just filled with joy because I realized I had something to work on, you know, that I could do something to change it. And I started to take steps. And yes, it takes some time, but I mean, it doesn't take that long. And I just started to change the way I looked at life. And I had a couple things happen where I couldn't get into a treatment facility, but I just started, you know, and I had no money. I was totally rock bottom, but I just started changing things. I thought, well, my whole life is just a string of bad habits, so I'm going to turn them around and do the opposite of everything I've been doing. So, like, instead of getting up in the morning and having a cigarette and doing all this, you know, like, negative thinking and everything, I got up this morning and I would say, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then I'd say, life is good. And then I would I would work out. And I started, you know, mantras. So my first mantra that I made up for myself was, there's hope after dope. And I used to do my ab crunches. I'd be like, there's hope after dope. There's hope after dope. I start out my day that way, you know, and it would just kick my brain into the better gear. You get those positive neurotransmitters and the whole thing.
Yeah.
Then I'd go out and do my cardio, and then I'd, you know, jump on my bicycle and look for work. Well, no, I had to save money for a bicycle. I mean, that's how I was. But, you know, I saw results really quickly. And then I started reading books. You know, there are a lot of books about the law of attraction, and I read some of the old school ones like The Magic of Believing and Wayne Dyer's first one, Real Magic. And, you know, and these books would come to me. I mean, I would have people say, oh, I've got this book I want you to read. You know, it'd be like out in, it was an attraction thing was happening.
Yeah.
So I didn't have money for books. I had somebody give me a battered old beat up paperback with no cover on it of Wayne Dyer's Magic of Real Magic. You know, I started reading that. I started applying that stuff, and I got a picture of a car, you know, the car I wanted, and I put that picture up on the, you know, on the mirror. You know, I did those kind of things, and I ended up getting that car. I mean, not right away. I had the bicycle, and then I had a car with some kind of bullet holes with primer spots and, you know, that kind of car. You know, well, you know,
a car with a lot of character, right?
Yeah, really a lot of character. And it, like, with a heater stuck on, you know, like that kind of car. But then it was a Honda. I wanted a red Honda Civic. That's what I wanted.
Oh.
And I ended up getting a red Honda Civic that was used. And but I had wanted the one I had in my image, and I hadn't been paying attention, but the one I had had in my image was a brand new Honda Civic. So I had this old one. It was, I think, 3 or 4 years old. To me, it was the new one. I was thrilled with it. I hadn't had it maybe a month or so when it got totaled. And I was like, what happened? What happened to my visualization? My car is gone. And you know what happened? When I got the insurance on it, and I got hit by somebody that had no insurance right at first. It looked like no insurance. But anyway, too much detail on that, but it ended up I did get the money, and I bought a brand new Honda red Honda Civic. So it was like the wreck almost, because I didn't get hurt in the wreck, which was a miracle. Somebody hit me, and anyway, it was a miracle that I was even walking, that I got out of the car, so I was unhurt, and my car was stolen. I collected, and it was a brand new version. You know, things work.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, I got to be really careful about what I put up on the mirror from now on, because, you know, this stuff's pretty exact.
What do you tell your clients who are coming to you for their addiction? How do you express the power of their mind and how really easy it is, or do you have to go back and find out what it is that they're escaping from. What is it?
Well, when in addiction treatment, there are certain parameters. It depends on the facility you're working for, and you. And I'm not currently working with clients now because I'm a full-time professional speaker. I'm a member of the National Speakers Association, and I speak on overcoming adversity, inspiration, and addiction and recovery. And I speak on other topics too. I speak to raise awareness about human trafficking and tell my story. But anyway, when I did work with clients, and I worked with homeless veterans, and it's a great question that you ask, because I worked with homeless veterans, and I had a client who was a Marine. And I think this is sort of a story that would answer your question. So he had been in and out of prison for 25 years when he came into the facility where I was working. And he'd been, you know, just out of Vietnam, and that had been going on. And when he came in, he came on my caseload, he was still on parole. And when I talked with him, I just said to him, this is what I do with all my clients. I would just say, what do you want to work on? What do you want to change? And we would talk about that. And there are some things you can give your clients that they have materials where they can look over things that they think they might want to work on and things like that. And in his case, he said, well, I get scared around people, and I'd like to change that. I'd like to overcome that fear. And so while we worked on the addiction, you know, the recovery from addiction and so on, he made that his focus. And so he set up doable, measurable goals and set different challenges for himself in that way. And the first one that he had, he employed, you know, I shared with him some of the books about the law of attraction, and he read them and he liked them. So he started using positive affirmations, visualization, mantras, positive self-talk. He started to use that stuff. And he was really good at it, I'm telling you. He, the first thing he set up for a challenge for himself was to attend a meeting to be a volunteer for the Red Cross. And he went, and when he came back, he was just like, he said to me, oh my gosh, there were probably 15 people. It was awful. He said, thank God I'm a felon and they didn't take me. Yeah, that's how he was at the first encounter. But after that, he said another and another. But as he did this visualization and meditation and worked on these things, he began to see the results. And he went on to different challenges that he had set, and he met each one. And he did more than that. He manifested a for himself. He came to me one day, and I didn't even know he was working on this. He came in to a session, and he said he had been visualizing finding his daughter. He had been estranged from his family, and he had a daughter that he hadn't seen since she was four, and he had been visualizing finding her. And he went to his parole officer, and his parole officer gave him a message. His daughter had been looking for him, and she had called the parole officer. I don't know how she found him. He was grown up. By then she was like 22. His daughter had found him. But he had manifested that with his visualization. It was so amazing. This guy had so much focus. He was so amazing. And anyway, long story short, after about a period of 6 weeks or so, he was calling me. He called me one day on his cell phone, and because by then he had a cell phone. But anyway, he called and he said, guess where I am? And he held out the phone. He was in Giants Stadium with a home game. You know, he was in there with thousands and thousands of people, and he was okay. And then after that, a few weeks or a month later, he was in. He was asked to read the name in Iraq, the fallen, and in a ceremony in downtown San Francisco. There were about 300,000 people there. It was an outdoor event, and he mounted the stage and got up to the podium, and this man who had been so terrified in a room full of 15 people, he got up there in front of 300,000 people and read the names of the fallen with poise and calm and assurance. And that's the kind of progress that a person can make if they totally give themselves over to this this kind of a discipline, as this man did, as this Marine did. He's a real really dynamic example of how things can change. And I'm still in touch with him. He's got a place in San Francisco, and, you know, he's still sober.
Oh, isn't
he's doing
wonderful.
His thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's something to be said for magical thinking. I got to tell you, I love it. But so does a person have to hit rock bottom? Or can they, oh, thank you. That's what I want to hear. Can they learn something else?
Yeah, I think it works better if you raise the bottom. If you just tell yourself, you know what, I'm not going to let this negativity get to, I don't have to suffer. You know, and in addiction treatment, we call it raising the bottom, where you can talk to a loved one and say, you know, hey, let me talk to you about this. This is the cause and effect. That's what they do when they do an intervention. They're raising the bottom. So the person doesn't have to do what I did and have that kind of horrific suffering. So and it's not just an addiction. I think in anything going wrong, you can stop it. You know, you can turn it around. And sure, terrible things happen in life. You know, we grieve. We have loss. We have suffering in life. But in the core, in that essential part of us, in our true selves, I mean, even when there's been a great loss and loss of a loved one and suffering, it doesn't have to become like a toxic suffering. You know, you can have grief, but within you can carry a serenity and a peace and a calm and a great gratitude for just being alive. And recognize the situation, recognize adversity as an opportunity to become more acquainted with how much you have, what your skills and abilities are. And I think that's when the law of attraction really comes in handy, is to employ that at those times and say, hey, wait a minute. This could be something, yes, something terrible has happened, but something good can come out. I can earn some more credits here. You know, I can build some more muscles, some more positivity muscles.
Wow. So how long have you been sober or free from all the drugs?
18 years, like I said, it's 18.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. August 8th, 1995 was my day that I entered into recovery and into this positive way of living and thinking. Yeah, so it's been a little over 18 years.
And did your husband do it along with you, or did somebody go first?
Oh, no, he went first. That's why I said he's my knight in shining armor. He came home one day and said, you know what, this dope stuff is getting way out of hand. We got to quit this. Quit this shit now, you know. and I said, what do you mean we, mofo? I was so hard. I was such a hard case. And so he started that and started changing his life, and I started seeing how it was working for him. And, at first it just made me mad. And at first I thought, oh, he's faking it. He can't really be happy. And then I started realizing, no, this is real. And then he was making real progress, and I just thought, that's when I saw myself and saw how miserable I was, and then I made the move. So, yeah, he led the way.
Wow, that's really neat, because that's absolute confirmation that when one person is committed to being happy, then their immediate environment has to change eventually. It's just like a law. It's going to change.
You're right. We transform our environment. You transform your environment when you get into this kind of thing, because you're radiating that energy. So everything around you begins to change. You're right.
It's wonderful to hear that from you. And my goodness, look what you have done since in the 18 years. I mean, I'm so impressed. Your book won a national award. I mean, this is huge. This is huge.
That's right.
And you're speaking all over the world. You're doing this comedy club thing in which you raise money.
It's not a club. It's a big auditorium.
Sorry.
It's a 550-seat auditorium, and we pack it.
My.
Yeah,
oh,
it's not a club, baby. We're raising some money over here. And
I love it.
We're just doing it once a year. But, you know, and there's more than that. It's You're right, though, but thank you so much I for celebrating that with me, because it has been amazing. And a lot of times I think, oh, there's so much more I could do or could have done or should have done or whatever. And then I realize, no, wait a minute, I just live in the present moment. But when I stop and look at what has been accomplished, it's been amazing. And so much of it has just been, I don't deserve this. It's just come to me. I mean, I really don't. I mean, I have worked hard, but I mean, if I were to stop and say, well, do I deserve or am I worthy of being happy? Well, if I wanted to take it the negative way and beat myself up and say, you know, I was raised Catholic and there's a lot of guilt, you know, and if wanted to think, well, I did this and I did that and I therefore deserve to suffer. I mean, that's what I was thinking when I was an addict, and it was this constant punitive cycle. But now I realize, you know what, I don't have to, nobody has deserve anything. It can just be, because it's there. The universe is so full of beautiful. The universe is full of beauty and love and joy and personal power. I mean, there's so much there, and it's out there. It's in the atmosphere, and a lot of people. It's as if you know what, like trees take in oxygen and give off carbon dioxide, right? And then you know what I mean? And then it's almost like if you begin, it's like an osmosis thing. There, you could either take in the negative and give off the negative, right, whatever that is in the ether, or you can do the thing where you're constantly producing the positive and taking in the positive. And I think there's more of the positive quantum units or whatever than there are of the negative, but I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not exactly Einstein, but...
Well, they're definitely more powerful. They're more powerful.
That's it. Yeah, and there's so much beauty. It's there. And I think there's another thing I learned from a Native American comedian that I work with. His name is Charlie Hill. He's legendary. But he told me I had a life-threatening disease, and I had to take a form of chemo for it, and it was really arduous, difficult process, and I was doing the law of attraction to heal and everything, and he was saying to me, about halfway through the process, he was saying, well, do you pray and ask for healing? And I said, well, yeah, sort of, I've been praying. And he said, hey, you know what, when you pray, it's not like a thing like asking. He says, it's not the words. He said, it's the emotions, because the universe responds to the emotion, to the feelings, much more than the words. So when you pray in a pleading way, like, hey, oh, please help me to be better, and oh, I hope this turns out, you don't get the results that you get if you just visualize, you know, just say, hey, thank you for this healing, and then feel what that's going to feel like. I remember him telling me, just imagine how that's going to feel when the doctor tells you you're cured, and then just feel that feeling, right? And then just right before you go to sleep, just say thank you for that, and then just feel that feeling. And I started doing that at night, and I started much better results. I mean, my experience with the chemo got better. my side effects got better. My red blood cell count stabilized. You know, I had some real results with that, and I've never forgotten what he told me about that. So there are things like that that just...
Yeah. Knock you out. This is wonderful. You know, there was Greg Braden was talking about...
Oh, I love him.
I do too. When he went to pray for rain, and he kept on saying, pray for rain, and the guy that was with him, who was performing this Indian ceremony, said, pray rain.
Yeah.
Not pray for rain. So he got in this circle, and he just felt himself with all of this rain. He's dancing in the mud, even though it was very dry. And that's what brought it, because he's feeling as if it already happened. He's praying as if it already is total in existence. And that's what quantum physics is all about.
Yep, and also, you know, you're right, just visualizing, feeling it, bring all your senses into it, and then feel it like it's in real time right now. And that's the part that I don't always break through to that when I visualize. I mean, sometimes I break through and I can feel that, and it's like, oh, wow, this is it, baby. And other times I'm not as powerful, but I still have a little bit of it. Sometimes I'll just even sometimes I'll even just go, I'll just close my eyes and feel a positive emotion and just go, yeah, you know, like I feel like even that will pump up something.
Oh yeah. Like,
even if, and you're right. And I think also acting as if, you know,
you're right.
Don't
mm-hmm.
you think, like, because for me, my visualizations sometimes take a long time to manifest. Sometimes they don't manifest. And that's okay too, because a lot of times I've found out that what I had visualized in my tiny grasp of what's going on in the big picture, my concept of what I want or need is wrong, and or maybe the way I'm visualizing it is just a little tiny postage stamp in a huge galaxy of universal truth, right? But I'll have my little postage stamp, and then when the thing does manifest, it's something much, much bigger than I had even imagined, or it's something that was good for me that I really did need, and it turned out the thing that I thought I wanted wouldn't have even been good for me.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, rather than if you don't see something manifesting and you don't see it happening and you think, well, instead of thinking, oh, well, enough with this, I'm done because it's not happening, just consider that it's still on the way, but it maybe is taking a different form. Maybe you don't know. Because I've had that happen many times in the last 18 years where I thought I wanted this or that, and then later it didn't happen, and I think, oh, I'm so glad that visualization didn't happen because I never would have wanted that.
Oh, exactly.
But then, well, something better happened.
Absolutely. Tell me, in this day and age, and you're out there seeing a lot of people, and everybody's got this fear. I mean, by now, hopefully, people have stopped listening to the mainstream media, but quite a few don't. They still do. They still get scared. What would you tell the listeners about what to do in this day and age that we are living in?
Yeah, I think that we are bombarded with a lot of fear and a lot of kind of anger-provoking stuff in the media. I agree with you about the overdose of information and news, and all of it, pretty much of it, is just bad stuff. So, I think one thing a person can do is to commit to have at least one day, take like one day every 10 days where you just don't listen to anything. I mean, where you don't it. Just cut it off and disconnect your brain from the digital machine and let things kind of stabilize and gel, because a lot of times And then the other thing about fear is fear, and I learned this from working at the vets. I mean, I know it myself, but I've come through a lot of terrifying things. And one of the reasons I named my book Never Give In to Fear is because of that. Because fear is the destroyer. It's like the mind killer. And with the veterans, because I had combat vets on my caseload, and something I learned from them was that courage is not the absence of fear. It's like the resistance to fear. It's the conscious decision to move through the fear to the objective. So you still feel the fear, you have the fear, but you go ahead and move through the fear. And that was something that I'm so grateful that I learned that from them. Because, you know, I always thought that extremely brave and courageous people just didn't feel fear the way we do. But wait, not to include you. I don't know if you're one of us. I was one of these people that very fearful. But then it's not. They feel the same fear we do. It's just that they make the decision to move through it and not to give in to fear, so to speak, or not to be paralyzed by it. And of course, you know, there's a lot of biological stuff that happens in the body when you're in a horribly terrifying situation where there are some things you... Anyway, but the kind of fear that we deal with every day, that stressful grind that comes from the media and comes from worrying about whether our country is going to fall apart or our world is going to fall apart or our house is... You know, those kind of things, we can disconnect from those by just saying, well, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and move through. How am I going to move through life anyway? Say I'm in a movie, like say I'm one of the people in a movie of an apocalyptic film, right? Say I'm in one of those. What would my character, what would I want my character to be like? You know? And then I could think, okay, well, I'm just going to be that. That's going to be my role because I'm the director of my movie. And if it just so happens that this turns into a really crazy, crazy thing that's completely out of control, what do I want to be like? What would the hero be like in that movie? I want to be like that. And I'm going to just live my life like that. And because there are so many things I can't control. It's completely out of my control. But I can look at, hey, okay, wait a minute. What can I change or what can I control? What do I have control over? Well, I have control over my attitude. I'm going to look at that. Or yeah. I have control over how I react to these things. And how do I treat the people that are immediately around me? How can I most best experience the present moment today? And then in my small field of vision, in my corner of the world, if it's going to be good, it's going to be good. And then if an asteroid hits me, well, heck, I went out in style.
Love it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I want to go out with some glam, you know. I had the presence of mind to put on a little lipstick before the asteroid hit because I was in the present moment.
Yeah. That's great. I'm going to remember that if it ever happens. Put that lipstick on. Just be smiling. I'm going to go out with a flame.
Well, it is kind of like that, though, because otherwise there's my own apocalypse. If I give in to all that scary stuff and I start thinking about it, I get sucked into the emotional vortex, and then I've got an apocalypse going on inside my own, my own experience, and then I'm crazy to everybody, and I'm out there, I'm like a whirling hurricane of mess, so why not just home it into the focus? That's what's so beautiful about the mind and what we can do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Boy, that is fun. This is really great. Marty, I want to ask, where can you get Never Give In to Fear, Laughing All the Way Up from the Rock Bottom? Where can you find this book? Where do we go to get to your website?
Thank you for asking that. Okay, my website is nevergiveintofear.com. It's actually Martin, but I'm not going to take the time to spell my name. It's complicated. So it's nevergiveintofear.com. And then on my website, there's a lot of things about me, and there's a link to buy the book on Amazon, but you can just go to Amazon because everybody does. Everybody buys all their books on Amazon, and I am on Amazon, and I'm an Amazon bestseller. And you just type in "Never Give In to Fear," Laughing All the Way Up from the Bottom, and it'll go to the ebook and the physical book. The book is also in bookstores. You can get it from my distributor, Bookmasters. The number is 1-800. Booklog, BOOKLOG. You can put it that way too.
And it is a book that's filled with so much, you can't help but learn from it.
Well, it's a collection of stories, it's a memoir. So it's not a self-help book, but there is the last chapters do have a lot of stuff about the law of attraction and some of that, but I just wanted to write a funny addiction memoir. I've read several addiction memoirs, and I just thought, I want to write one where you can look back with a sense of humor, and where it's appropriate, I think I accomplished that. There are other parts of the book where wouldn't have been appropriate for it to be humorous, so I have, there are some scary parts and some sad parts, but it tells a story, and I'm working on another book right now. It's a memoir of the years prior to Never Give In to Fear, and that's the years that I worked in the oil field. I was one of the first women to work as a laborer in the Texas oil field, and that book's going to be...
Wow.
That'll be funny. It's going to be a funny memoir. But, yeah, the one that's out on the market now, please check it out. It's got about 150, I don't know, it's got a bunch of reviews on there, and a lot of them are good.
Yeah.
A lot of them are good, yeah.
Well, yes, just an incredible story that has to give you inspiration, because look where she started from and look where she is today. Marty, you're fabulous. Thank you so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to jules@loaradionetwork.com and have a great week.